Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
We're back. we're back, tripping over the dials that I just knocked into. And Sid Fernando joins us. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. Sid, good morning. No, where's Sid? Sid, where are you?
Steve, can you hear me?
There we go. Can hear you now. All right. I don't know what was going on. Lost it. Couldn't.
Yeah, that was a good episode with Michael Bowen.
He's so much fun. He's so, you know, the energy level that he brings to this effort is really amazing. You know, it started out
great as stuff.
It started as a lark, and I don't think in his wildest dreams Michael expected to, you know, to have this kind of impact and to have, you know, the facility at in New York, the facility out at Kentucky Downs, and now a satellite farm that Ashton Grove that he just told us about too, that John Secura helped contribute to. So and everybody, you know, industry wide is really, you know, taken to the concept, the idea of having, you know, a destination to go see all these horses, turning them into a tourist attraction. It's amazing.
Yeah. And, you know, the funny thing is I remember reading his reviews in the Boston Globe, his film reviews in the early to mid 80s. So he must have started this after that, obviously.
Yeah. As he was retiring, essentially. I mean, and we've had so many fun conversations. You know, his time at Suffolk, you know, he used to hang out at Suffolk and he used to groom a little bit. And he's a major character. Not to mention a gold mine. I mean, there's been a few occasions where I've brought up, you know, film topics with him and just let him, you know, let him riff, because he's got, you know, countless occasions. And, you know, John Huston, you get him, he could spend 3 hours telling you about the time he spent with John Huston, for instance. I mean,
you can tell that too. You know, he brings that quality to his storytelling, even the anecdotes he gave to you were just terrific.
Yeah,
with the Wicked North and DeSormo, bareback.
That's my favorite. I always forget. I always forget who it is that, you know, that Kent jumped on, and now I'm gonna commit it to memory that it was the Wicked North. That when he told me that story, I fell over the first time. I knew people that hadn't heard it would get a kick out of it. and you can just see Kent doing that too. Right? It's perfect. You know, I got so many things for you, and I've mentioned the last couple of weeks about these late season signings, as it were, horses that are going to, you know, now stand stud. And we had another one in the last day or so in Bodie Express. He's going to stand in California. We talked a little bit about Thousand Words. I've also got to go to I filed this away because I did see there's a couple of lower profile names, Sid. West Virginia. I wanted to mention the West Virginia farm, Luke's Alley and Duke of Mischief, from a couple of weeks ago. They're going to be at Flowing Acres. in West Virginia. And, you know, it's got to be hard to draw attention to, you know, to some of particularly the regional markets. And, you know, this late in the season, how tough is it going to be for these operations to attract attention to stallions just announced at the farm?
Well, for regional farms, it's not that tough because, you know, a lot of regional farms, areas don't really breed right away for a couple of reasons. They're not as high tech. They're not commercial. You know, when you take Kentucky, it's built around it, you know, the technology of keeping maiden mares under lights and farms and then breeding as soon as possible when the breeding season opens. In regional areas, you know, they tend to be more natural breeding environments where mares come into season as the light improves with the weather. So they don't, you know, and they're not breeding to the commercial marketplace. So earlier foal isn't, you know, one of the biggest things for them. So, and the other thing is that, you know, regional areas don't get tons of mares. So, you'll find a lot of smaller backyard breeders, you know, shop around and breed mares later in the season anyway. So as far as, you know, again, regional areas are concerned, it's not as paramount. What is surprising to me, and you and I have talked about this before, it just seems like there's more horses going to stud this year than I can recall. In recent years, anyway.
Yeah.
Whether it's Kentucky or the regional areas, which is, I think that it's a great sign. That's one of the things that, you know, even if you go back, 50 years, 40 years, you had more stallions at stud, and it just made everything more diverse in a lot of ways. So, you know, I think part of this the more horses going to stud, you know, again, I have no way to quantify this, but I just think that more regional areas aren't shipping into Kentucky to breed. And so there's more opportunity for some of these regional farms to maybe get regional breeders breeding to their own horses. I mean, that's, you know, that's a possibility of what's taking place. At any rate, it gives more horses a chance to go to stud and another job, another career for them too.
How many mares, essentially, for some of these late season additions, how many mares would constitute a success, and how far behind? And I suppose Kentucky is probably the place to talk about this. What does a new addition need to, give him a fighting chance at being successful?
Well, again, you have to go, depending on what region you're talking about. Now, say Washington State, you know, if a stallion got 18 to 20 mares there, that would be a huge book. California, Mr. Fifke stands Charles 50 stands, Jersey Town out there. I know that. So I know, like, a horse like him, you know, if he can get 30 or 40 mares out there, that's pretty good. Now, there's a stallion in California called Sir Prancelot, who's been reverse shuttling. He's a European horse, and, you know, he's had a long and winding road. He was standing in first in Europe, shuttling to Australia. Then he had, you know, his progeny had success in California. So then he's reverse shuttled to California. And I've heard he's gotten over, you know, 100, 120 mares. Huh. So that's huge over there. You know, a place like West Virginia, I mean, you know, that horse Fiber Song, the top horse over there, would probably, you know, get the lion's share of mares. But then, you know, 20 mares would probably be huge for anybody else, or maybe even 15. So, you know, a lot of this depends on what region. New York, you know, with the big breeders' incentives and the fund here, has you know, become super popular. And, you know, as we've seen, a horse like Laoban, who just came to Kentucky, started off here in New York, and at Sequel, Becky Thomas's place. So, you know, horses here in New York could probably, you know, expect big horses can, you know, get pretty large books.
There also, there's also been a flurry of activity, obviously mares. I don't know if you had a chance yesterday to listen. We had Garrett O'Rourke, and we saw that press release on Monday from Judman about the decisions that they made with their mares. We had a really nice conversation with Garrett.
Yeah,
it was fun. And even, you know, under the circumstances, and there really wasn't a lot that he could talk about regarding Prince Khalid, but you know, they certainly are poised for a big year, and they've got you know, an elite broodmare band. So it was interesting, you know, to see what some of their decisions, you know. And then you've had just again the last couple of days. I mentioned this morning sharing. I'm anxious to hear from Aaron Wellman about what they're going to do with her after having to, you know, seemingly be forced to make a decision to retire her. An injury, you know, after the racing season, she was just playing around in a paddock. I mean, they can get hurt any which way. There was also, you know, there's also been a couple of international decisions and exports and sales, and the most recent being four-wheel drive. That American Pharoah is going to go to Japan.
Yeah,
saw that.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, American Pharoah has had terrific success. A number of, you know, promising young horses winning out there. You know, his name has really been in the news in Japan. And he's had some stake horses there, Cafe Pharoah America.
Right.
He's going in a G1 next. So he's had quite a few winners over there, so that there's some real name recognition. And, you know, the Japanese, they really like American horses. And you know, even though they're predominantly their best races are on turf, they still have about 50% of their races on dirt. That's the JBBA part of it. The NAR part of it, as they call it. And so a horse like that with, you know, by a dirt stand, you know, a lot of his horses, American Farrier's horses, have won on dirt there. And so, you know, four-wheel drive has that duality, turf winner, and he's by a dirt stallion and has that name recognition. So, yeah, it's interesting. He's going to, you know, a smaller farm that's subsidized by the Japanese Bloodstock Breeders Association, as opposed to going to a private farm like Shaddai or something. So it'll be interesting to see the response he gets. But I'm sure he'll, you know, I'm sure he'll get his mares over there.
I'm just thumbing through my stack. In passing, we mentioned you know, Thousand Words from the week before, and Pioneer of the Nile Sun to Spendthrift. How many? You know, what constitutes a successful season for him? Have you recommended him at all yet?
Recommended him to one mare recently. Spendthrift, you know, they have a ton of stallions, and they try and breed as many mares as they can to their horses. So I'm sure they'll be hustling to try to, you know, fill them up as much as they can. A lot of their first-year horses, well, first-year horses in general are going to be super popular. So you have so many first-year horses that everybody's scrambling to, you know, if they can't get into one, they'll get into another. But Spendthrift, you know, their model is to breed as many mares as they can. And I'm sure that they're going to, they have quite a few new horses, and Pacoma is there too, isn't he?
Pacoma, and yeah. I should put the new the list together of all the new stallions, because it's gotten hard to I had it on my website. I should go there and I should add the most recent names at the end of last year when I thought, you know, it was kind of slowing down, but it's taken back off again. You know what I have to mention as well, and of course we'll have a whole bunch more of the short yearlings that'll go through the sale, Sid, but there were a couple of notable successes here. The babies yesterday, I mentioned that the highest the biggest price was that $130,000 Practical Joke colt that Summerfield sold. Ron Clark Shepherd bought, and I gotta mention, you know, particularly because we feature Hill and Dale, Army Mule, and this is his first crop, and it sure feels like Army Mule, who stands for 10,000. He had what feels like some well-received yearlings yesterday, and at least three that I saw among the, you know, the top sellers: 40,000, 50,000, 60,000, 66,000. His babies must be making an impression.
They must, and, you know, he was a fast horse, and that's the type of horse that, you know, appeals to pinhookers, too. So a lot of these short yearlings will be flipped around and go through a process later, sell later in the year, and then some may then reappear as two-year-olds. And he's, you know, he's the type of stallion that John Chicora has had success with, as we've mentioned many times on this show, you know, a horse that may not have the strongest or most recognizable pedigree close up, but has the physical and the racetrack performance particularly, you know, speed. And that horse certainly was extremely fast, if, you know, somewhat unsound. But, you know, those types of horses have, you know, become successful in the past, not just for John Secora. I mean, of course, the most notable example of a horse like that with three starts and undefeated, a lot of speed, is Danzig at Claiborne. But a horse with six starts undefeated had some issues and later became a big stallion that John Secora made with Candy Ride.
Absolutely. These three for three yesterday, and all in the top end of the yearling sellers, 60, 52, and 40. There was one out, and then today there's three more that go. Hip 551, 647, and 673. And what's interesting, I'm looking at the covers, Sid, and one was out of a Congaree mare. That Stuart Morris sold. That was the $40,000 colt that went to En Fuego Stables. And then one went to, one was a Medaglia d'Oro mare, Lady Halite. This was Beth Baer's, this was the top seller of the three, $60,000. And one was out of a Halo's Image mare. And of course, Army Mule himself by Frisian Fire, who, you know, has had some isolated runners. So it seems that any Frisian Fire that Seth Klarman buys seems to work. But this really feels like a story that's emerging to see, you know, these are short yearlings. I mean, these might as well be, you know, these are weanlings that are starting to, you know, mature a little bit. There's got to be a lot to like about them.
Yeah, and you know, this horse, you know, I think what people, when you take a look at Frisian Fire, he was the son of AP Indy. So when you look at Army Mule, you see Frisian Fire, but if you jump it a generation above, you have AP Indy right there. And then he's out of a Crafty Prospector mare. So in his case, you know, AP Indy was and is known as a real stamina influence. And Crafty Prospector was, you know, a very speedy influence. So essentially, Army Mule's pedigree is a blend of speed and stamina of a really successful cross of AP Indy, really, with Mr. Prospector. Yet, Army Mule is known as, you know, this really brilliantly fast sprinter. And so, I think whenever you have a stallion that had that type of speed, everyone gets interested in those horses. And I think what you're going to find when we get to see them as at 2-year-old sales, I think you're going to see quite a few that are quite popular, Steve.
There's another one that catches my eye, kind of isolated, a first crop short yearling here. Mendelssohn had a $95,000 seller.
Yeah. Mendelssohn is a horse that, honestly, I thought he'd probably sell better than, I mean, they sold really well last year. He stands for, what, 30,000? But he is a horse that, you know, like Army Mule, by the way, who was like an $825,000 2-year-old, which is an extremely high price for Frisian Fire. Mendelssohn, in his year, was, you know, the topper. He sold for $3 million. He's also a G1 winner at 2. And then, of course, at 3, he won the UAE Derby and placed in a lot of good races. The thing with him is he's yes, he's a half-brother to Beholder, but in the stallion market, he's a half-brother to Into Mischief. And he's by Scat Daddy from the same line as Into Mischief, that Stormcat Sire line. Scat Daddy, you know, first son, No Name Never, has been a terrific success for Coolmore in Europe. And, you know, with this horse, his race record, his pedigree of being a half to Into Mischief and Beholder, et cetera, and with his looks, he's almost on paper, you know, you look at him as almost like a surefire success. So based on all that, I'm a little surprised that they haven't exploded at a bigger rate.
Interesting.
You compare him to, for example, City of Light, who's a beautiful horse. An expensive horse, a beautiful, well-conformed horse, a horse with a much bigger race record, actually, too. But physically, those yearling, foals of his sold at a higher rate than the Mendelssohns, and they were at the same comparable stud fee, you know, I think 30,000 and 35,000. So it's going to be really interesting to see, you know, what happens when these horses run, because on paper, Mendelssohn seems to be the horse that you put your money on. But so far, as far as the physicals are concerned, people are betting on City of Light versus him.
Now, and I think, was there a City? I thought there was maybe one. I thought there was a City of Light. Maybe not. Hold on. Yeah, there was one City.
Well, you know, at the January sale, yeah.
There was one that R&H yesterday. And that was the only one that was in the sale. The Stuart Morris was hip 180. I knew I had seen one going through the catalog. We'll look forward to today's action and see what else. And then, of course, we look to February for the first week of February for the Phasic mix sale. And Sid, we can't leave without touching on the 3-year old, the most impressive 3-year old from the weekend, going back to Friday opening day at Oaklawn and Caddo River. Talked yesterday with Brad Cox, and feels like this is a horse that, you know, got people very excited. Might not have been the toughest field out there, but hard spun colt that looks to have a future.
I mean, they're all popping right now, and between him and some promising maiden winners, what's really interesting about him coming from Oaklawn, of course, is his connections. The short leaf stable bred him and owns him, and Short Leaf is the reincarnation of John and Anthony's Loblolly stable, which was so popular and successful from a different era. So he's back, and this colt won the Smarty Jones. Extremely impressively, and you know, it's just another feather in the cap for his sire, Hard Spun. Hard Spun also had a 3-year-old maiden winner at Fairgrounds on the turf. I mean, this is a really well bred colt, and you know, he looks like he's a horse that probably you know, has quite a bit of stamina in his pedigree. Quite a bit of speed in his bottom line. His dam is by Congrats, and the second dam is by Yes, It's True. You know, it's a great combination of some American speed and stamina. And so, you know, this horse is certainly an exciting horse and one to watch.
You know, looking through that female family, you mentioned Pangburn, the congrats mare, and the second dam, It's True Love from Yes, It's True. Love and Spoonful, the third by Dixieland Band. Then you go back to Oh My Darling, who was a Mr. Prospector mare, is the fourth dam. But the name that I saw right away was Midnight Pumpkin, a pretense mare, the Dam of Tanks Prospect, which I got a big kick out of when I saw Midnight Pumpkin's name.
Yeah, the Dam of Tanks Prospect who won the Preakness.
Yeah.
So there's some classic performance in the family.
Very much. And, of course, that Oh My Darling, the full sister to Tank's Prospect. And she herself bred by one of our favorite people whose name comes up. So I got to get Ed back on. Oh My Darling was bred by Ed Seltzer.
Yeah, one time a huge name in the business.
He's still producing nice horses and winners. I whenever I see one of his and Bev Anderson's horses, they had a day where they had two winners, a stake winner and another horse. I should pull the names up, but years ago, going into a Breeders' Cup, Seltzer had a filly that I really thought was going to be a big star, and she really didn't pan out. I want to say Knights Templar, and I thought I saw her first couple of wins. I thought she was going to be really special, but I just kind of latched on, so I think I had Ed on the show and have kind of followed his horses since. But
and that's have Oh to My Darling that Ed bred.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to ask him about her.
Well, what happened is he got out of his family. So if you go and look at the pedigree, you'll notice that he bred Oh My Darling. Then he got out of the family. He got back into it by buying Oh My Darling's granddaughter, It's True Love, and then bred Pangburn, the dam of Caddo River. So here's a case of a breeder who got back into his own family. If you look at Pangburn, I think he's the co-breeder.
With Bev Anderson, who they together on a lot, horses that they own, and Pangburn, I think he campaigned John Ed Anthony.
Yeah, he did.
Okay.
Pangburn was John Ed Anthony horse. Yeah, but the Ed Seltzer part is interesting because he had that mare. So just to recap for listeners, Ed last had the fourth dam that you mentioned, Steve, Oh My Darling by Mr. Prospector, got out of his family, and then he came back and bought the second dam of Caddo River, It's True Love, and then co-bred the dam of Caddo River.
I'm going to get Ed back on. It's been too long, and we'll have him talk about that experience and what how that decision making prospect kind of jumping that, because that Love and Spoonful is in between that I've just pulled up. Peter Pritchard bred, and in fact, that that mare, that Love and Spoonful, in addition to It's True Love, had a couple of other nice ones. That I see K's and J's was a nice horse. I want to say K's and J's. I want to say Bernie Flint, but I don't know if that was a nice stake horse as well. So we'll get Ed Seltzer on and have him explain how he approached it. And you know, by all rights, Sid, when you think about John Ed Anthony's experience, because you talk about Lob Lolly, and then he kind of pulled away himself from the business and then came back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And of course, his horses are named after, I don't know where Caddo River is, but they've been named after places from his, you know, home state
Arkansas.
Of Arkansas.
Oh, yeah. The Pine Bluff, you know, and you
Pine
bet.
Bluff, you know, the whole thing, Little Missouri.
Well, and when you drive into Hot Springs, there's a couple of different roads, especially when you're out around Lake Hamilton, and there's roads that are instantly recognizable as Lob Lolly horses.
And the other thing about Lob Lolly that some people
Pine Tree,
might not recognize,
Pine Tree Lane,
is that he. What you know, Chuck McGahey was training for him, and then Chuck
right.
got the job with the Phippses. And actually,
well,
Chuck took over, did hold on when he took the private job. One of the things was that he would still be able to train one of John Ed's last big great horses, Van Landingham.
I was going to say Van Landingham was the horse that Chuck was the one that when you think about the early Lob Lolly success.
Mm-hmm. You go back though, and you know John Joe Canty trained for him.
Cox's Bohannon.
Ridge was his real, yeah, and Cox's Ridge was really his first big horse.
Well, I've gotten the official word. Caddo River absolutely is in the Diamond State. It is in Arkansas,
there it is.
And and it's a tributary of the Washita River, and of course the mountain range through Hot Springs. That's funny. The formula for success is there for John Ed.
Yeah, everything is right there. He's got the name now to top everything off.
I should mention too. Do you have his son's book, Edwin's book, The American Thoroughbred?
No, I don't, but, it's supposed to be an excellent book, and his son, Ed Anthony, is, you know, a great pedigree guy, a real expert and accomplished, authority.
Very much. And his yeah. book, The American Thoroughbred, and I've got the first volume. Essentially, it's a throwback volume to, I mean, literally to, you know, Tessio style, writing and Vosburgh type, pedigree analysis and the tying together of families. It's just gorgeous.
Wow, I
should really get him back too. We haven't we talked when it came out, and I've got a beautiful copy of The American Thoroughbred.
Well, it's an accomplished human family as well.
Absolutely. Sid, this was we got kind of cleaned up. I managed to get quite a few things off the desk that have been piling up.
Yeah, threw a bunch of stuff together.
Well done. We've got a nice weekend coming, and we'll have more 3-year-olds to kind of wade into. It really felt like after Saturday, between a future wager and you got this Pegasus card we got the eclipses on Thursday. It really feels like the season is underway at this point.
Yes, exactly. So
the sale
we're rolling again.
I appreciate it. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill and Dale. And working with Sid, you can call Work Thoroughbred Consultants, 510-490-1111. And some of you probably have had a maybe baby drop already. The full photos are so adorable. I saw yesterday. I saw where Solomini got his first a filly, and of course standing at McMahon. And this was a filly at Hidden Lake and 3C. And I saw that the Harris family, they welcomed a filly, Ohm's first foal, a filly as well, yesterday. So we're getting those daily arrivals that nothing cleanses your Twitter timeline like a fuzzy foal.
Excellent.
Sid, I appreciate it. We'll check
Absolutely.
In next week.
We'll see you next week, Steve. Thanks.
Sid Fernando, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. Let's take the break here, and we come back. We've got Dr. Allday, as promised. Horse Health Today, brought to you by Luberson and Reborn. And I do want to ask Steve about, in addition to those topics that I mentioned this morning, the Levamisole again and the ACE and the thing about the tech. I do want to see if Rich got in contact with him regarding Reborn and, you know, maybe, you know, giving a boost to the prospects for their pony that was ailing. So I'm going to ask Steve about that as well. Then some Ed DeRosa and Seth Merrow. So got basically three 20-minute segments to close out Wednesday, hour three after this at the races.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.